Welcome to The Den. We're a podcast from Cubs Den. You can find us on the Chicago Now website. I'm your host, Miles Phelps. You can find me on Twitter at mphelps11. And obviously, make sure to follow at Cubs Den. With me, as always, Jared Willis. He's at J Willis. It's at J-W-Y-L-L-Y-S. He writes for Forbes and a bunch of other different places when he finds the time somehow with his crazy life. And I say crazy. You're a teacher and have four kids. That's all I mean by that. He's not going to nightclubs night after night or something. But anyway, Jared, how you doing?
No.
That I know of, yeah.
No. I wouldn't be able to stay awake. I'd be the guy like asleep at a table. But yeah. No.
How you been?
I'm pretty good. I mean, all things considered, I really can't complain at all. Pretty good.
Good. Yeah, I mean it's not like anything crazy is going on right now, so just boilerplate boilerplate lives everywhere.
Normal stuff. A spring and summer that we will soon forget, I'm sure.
Totally. Yeah, it's just crazy. Jared and I were kind of laughing before we started recording. So this is the 41st episode, and I think the 40th episode we recorded right after David Ross was hired. And so the here were our topics during that episode. Cubs got a new manager. There was some KB rumors. Remember how long ago that was?
Oh, yeah.
And what to expect in 2020. And since then, we've had an epidemic. We've had civil unrest across the nation. Just so many things are happening. And now, this week, after a lot of discussions and back and forth, both sides being a bunch of idiots, the MLB has decided that, yes, they are going to go ahead with the 2020 MLB season. So Jared and I are going to talk about that. We'll get to how that's going to be structured, some of the rule changes. And I think Jared and I are kind of on the same page of like, if this is even the right move forward. So we'll get to all that. But I wanted to first just start off with what USA Today said today. So baseball obviously is coming back. They agreed to a 60-game schedule. And this is from Bob Nightingale over at USA Today. And he said it'll be the shortest season since 1878. Playing 60 of the normal 162 games, just 37%, with each team playing 40 games in its own division, 20 interleague games against their corresponding geographical division. So that's how everything's going to be set up. But I thought that was nuts. Since 1878, we haven't had a season this short. But what were your thoughts after hearing that news that MLB and the Players Association had come to an agreement?
Well, I mean, selfishly, like, I was happy just because, you know, I've been rooting for a season to be able to happen. And if nothing else, it means that we don't have to get these like daily updates about the negotiations where, you know, it just the constant back and forth for like a month. I was sick of it. And I think most fans were sick of hearing about it. So, happy just because like, okay, we've got something. Like, whether or not it was turned out to be the best thing for the players, I don't quite think so. But yeah, happy that there's something. But like you kind of alluded to, I think one of the major concerns that is going to be on everybody's minds for a while is whether or not this actually is able to happen. I appreciate that they are trying. Maybe like had they said at some point back in May or so, if they had just said, listen, because of health concerns, because of the virus, we're just not convinced there's a safe way to carry out this season. I think most fans would have been okay with that. I think most people that would have been understandable and just said, yeah, you know what? It stinks to lose a baseball season, but in the grand scheme of things, we can accept that. But the way it's played out instead has been something totally different. Where it's been all, at least publicly, just nothing but arguments over money. And then once they had sort of agreed to this framework, then after that, it was like, okay, now let's figure out some of these health concerns. So it's very possible that, I mean, anytime within the next few weeks or month, or maybe even more, that they have to shut things down again because they get too many positive tests. I don't know. I mean, they're going to be positive tests. There's no way.
Right.
But I think it has to be a question of like, what's the threshold. I haven't seen anything about that yet. What the threshold is for, okay, this is too much. This is too many. We need to shut this down. I don't know. So that's like the big like shadow kind of hanging over the whole thing, is that at a, you know, at a moment's notice, it could all be over.
Right. Yeah. I mean, spring training is set to start in, what, less than a week, July 1st. We're recording this on the 25th of June. So, I mean, we're there, already, and it seems really, really quick. So maybe let's talk about, you know, should this happen? And then we'll get to some of the rule changes and, maybe some of the logistical stuff of like, how do you deal with a shortened season and things like that? So I think from my perspective, first of all, and it sounds like you might've had the same frustration hearing just the back and forth of both the Players Association and the owners squabble over, to me, wasn't the issue. To me, the issue was, are you able to play this safely? And the way that it was framed, and this just could be from the writing, maybe this is not how actual conversations went, but the way that it was proposed to us on the outside, not in the room, is we need to figure out how we're going to pay everybody. We need to figure out what we're going to do with revenue. How are we going to split up this type of money? Do players get a prorated salary? Do they get their full salary? All of the things that don't matter, in my opinion. Like, the things that should matter would be like, okay, like, what is the process for when somebody tests positive outside of the normal things that we already know, like put yourself in quarantine, 6 feet rule, all that stuff. But like, in practice, when you're playing a sport that is in close proximity, like, you've been in a locker room, you know that, like, there's like people are around you all the time. Like, how do you even do that when your facilities were built for pre-COVID? I just don't. So that was my first frustration, was that. And the second thing was like, how, so now what? Like, what happens? Like, what if we play the entire regular season and we get into the playoffs and your ace pitcher gets COVID, and now your bullpen gets COVID, your catchers, and it just spreads. Like, do you reschedule the game? Do you postpone then the rest of the regular season while you're waiting for the first round NLDS team to then catch up to the rest of the schedule? But there's so many ifs that it just doesn't seem plausible until our health experts can help us out and hopefully get a vaccine relatively soon. But what were your thoughts on that? Was it similar to me, or where did you kind of land?
Yeah, I'm in very much kind of the same place, just because.
Jared, that's kind of a leading question, what I just did for.
Yeah, and you set me up. Yeah. And what I could do if this was like sports radio, I would just pretend to disagree with you.
Yeah, you pivot.
Even though that's not really what I think, I would just say that what you said was crazy, and then just say something else.
Yeah, we can do it if you want.
You know, but I mean, like, I'm going to get a little like behind the curtain here, but one of the things that has frustrated me the most in the last like 5-6 weeks or so is in the world of sports reporting. And I think baseball has this problem maybe more so than other leagues, but there are about 3 or 4 people who get like truly, truly inside information. So it's one thing to do what I do, which is to like have a media credential and go into the clubhouse and talk to players and the managers. But I'm thinking of the guys like Jeff Passan, Bob Nightingale, John Heyman, and maybe like one or like Buster. Yeah, Buster Olney, like Joel Sherman. There's a group of about maybe half a dozen who like genuinely are getting, or like Rosenthal, guys that are getting like real inside info. But the thing that can really warp our view of what's happening is they get told something and they pass it along via Twitter to the rest of the world. But what we don't usually see is that like, that's just what they were told. So there could be a whole lot of other things that happened that, say, Bob Nightingale just wasn't told about. But he gets this little nugget and puts it out there. And then the rest of us are all reacting based on this like tiny little chunk of information. And it's not, I mean, I don't know that that's really Nightingale's fault or any of those other guys like Jeff Passan, you know, when he has a source within the league that tells him something and then he puts it on ESPN. That's like, that is kind of his job. But I think one of the problems we've run into is sports reporting has become so much about like getting a scoop as opposed to trying to like tell the full story or trying to tell a quality story, so that where it's super reactionary. Like, here's a tweet and everybody starts like reacting without even taking the chance to let it digest or think about it or get more information. And, but we're just like, we're rolling. So I do wonder, maybe it's not that they were only negotiating money. Maybe it's just that that's all that we were hearing about. And there were a lot of other things being discussed at the same time, but nobody was leaking that information. Who knows? So yeah. It could, and so maybe this whole like drama that plays out on Twitter is all like a waste of everybody's time because we don't even know what we're talking about. And I think it's worth considering too, like there have been strikes in the past in baseball and negotiation processes, but this is the first time that we've had this ability to like see it all out in the open. You know, in 1994, there wasn't the ability to like live tweet, you know, what you were hearing about what was going on. The internet like barely existed at that point. So, or at least not that like most people had access to. I don't even think we had the internet at my house in 1994. So, unless you saw it in the newspaper or happened to see it on SportsCenter at night, like you just didn't know. So I wonder how much that like affected and contributed to not only the process itself, but also as fans or as people who cover the sport otherwise, how we perceived what was going on.
That's interesting.
So, and that's, you know, that's one of those things that there, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about that because that's just the way sports media functions now. It's all about trying to get a quick scoop and throw it out on social media. And most of the time, like people, that's the reason that Bob Nightingale has, I don't know, 500,000 followers, even though he frequently makes mistakes and gets things wrong. But because people know, odds are he's going to have he's going to be the first guy to tell you when something's gone down.
Right.
Because most of the time on Twitter or social media, people are not there because they're looking for insight or depth. They're just looking for quick information. So I think this is kind, in a way, like this is sort of a thing that we've brought on ourselves.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that in terms of, you know, the type of information that we're getting. And that's probably just the result of, you know, Twitter in general of, you know, like in back in the day when you were a newspaper writer or an editor, you packed the important information in the first, what, three sentences? And that the rule?
Yeah, that's kind of like you get all the vital stuff out first. Yeah.
Right. And I think that it's just been taken to the extreme on Twitter, which, yeah, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, I think, as we always say. But yeah, I think that, again, it was frustrating to, I guess, hear the narrative, even if that wasn't the case of what was the perception, whether or not that was the actual reality. So with the shortened season, so 60 games, that's not even half of what a regular season might be. And for years, I don't know where you stand on this, but I know I was in favor of shortening the season. I don't have a good number, but 60 games was not on my radar. So, I mean, this yeah. it's like a different sport and a different way that you have to play it. So what do you see as maybe some of the more strategic ways that teams might play this, or how do you structure your pitching staff? Like, I don't even know where to begin.
I know there's so many things about like in a normal season, I think generally the focus is on like trying to win each series. So if you're in a three-game series, you're looking at it kind of like, I want to win two of these games. But that's one thing that, you know, maybe you can't really get away with that as much anymore. Or if you're like, yeah, we're just having a bad road trip. Well, one bad road trip could decide your whole season. And yeah, that's technically true in a 162-game season, but it's far more likely to have a larger impact in a 60-game season. So take last year where the Cubs started off, what was it, like 2-7 or something like that, mm-hmm. in the very beginning of the season. You go 2-7, that's like, that by itself will decide things for you. So I think that's one aspect of this shortened season where, like, you know, the Cubs had the Every Game Matters motto last year, and really, like, they should have saved it for this year. Because you're not going to have the luxury of, like, yeah, you know, they got the better of us today, because you can't afford that. And even some of the teams where you see them do things like bullpen games and that sort of thing, where it's really kind of like, they don't say it, but you know that they're this is a throwaway game for us. Like if it's a bullpen game, you're not expecting to win. So perhaps you see less of that. So those are the things that with that shortened schedule, I think, like, some of those, the strategy, the, and just the general mindset of, hey, it's several months of a season that we've got, there's time, let's not panic, let's not get overly worked up about, you know, a bad week or so. And you can't afford that anymore. Cause I've talked to players before about, like, just the mindset shift of when you get later in the season, when it's August and September, how does your mindset shift about the importance of the games and how you approach the little things that you do? And they all say, like, there is a difference when you're playing a game in May or even June versus when it's like late August or around Labor Day and the end of the season is in sight. They, you know, they're pretty outspoken about the fact that, yeah, it's not the same. So, that's going to be interesting as well, as how teams handle just that mental part of it.
Yeah. I keep coming back to the Cubs having a rookie manager during all this. I can't figure out if it's a good thing or a bad thing, or just, you know, net neutral. Have you thought about that at all?
I have a little bit. And maybe this could be just a little bit of my bias showing through, but I think it may prove to be a good thing, just because David Ross isn't coming in with, like, as many predispositions or expectations about how to manage. You know, it's not like a guy who's been managing for decades who has put together season after season after season. Maybe the fact that he hasn't ever done that before will help him to, like, be more likely to have fresh ideas or try different things in a 60-game sprint. So, yeah, I think that it may work to his advantage.
All eyes on Dusty Baker, then, is what you're saying this year.
Exactly. Yeah. he's the guy that came to mind as I was talking about, like, the manager that had been around for decades. In my head, I was picturing Dusty Baker. Honestly, Joe Maddon, now that he's over in Anaheim, like, this – His whole thing, we know, has always been like, hey, relax. Let's not get too up or too down about anything. That may not work as well in 60 games. We'll see.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how creative our team's going to be or how uncreative teams are going to be. I mean, it's going to be kind of interesting to see both sides of that. You want to talk about some of these rule changes?
Yes, let's get into it.
All right, so one of the first ones that I am super excited for is the implementation of the DH, even with NL teams. I think this is going to be so much fun, especially in a shortened season. And I'm hoping, you know, they still have to go through the new CBA, which, from what I've read, the DH might not end up on that list, but we'll see. But I think this will be a good, like, test run, like how they sometimes do in the lower leagues of baseball. But what was your thought on that first one?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm quite as excited for it, but I'm also, like, it's been long overdue for it to happen. The DH has been in the American League for close to 50 years. So it's not like the DH was ever going to go away in the American League. So it's in a way, it's kind of embarrassing that it's taken this long. You know, we knew it was coming, so here it is. Let's see how it looks. I think there are definitely some aspects about it that I think National League fans are going to find that they enjoy. But I also like it because it's another roster spot for a player. It creates more opportunity. And I know some people will write it off as like, oh, it's the, you know, aging first baseman or outfielder who can't play defense anymore, who's a DH. But like, look around the league. How many teams actually use that type of a guy as a DH? It doesn't really happen that much anymore.
Like Aubrey Huff doesn't play anymore.
Right. Like, we're not talking about 1980s baseball or 1990s baseball where it's the guy with like blown out knees who is 40, who's DHing for you. Like, there's not a whole lot of that happening. But so I think it's a good thing ultimately. And I do think when the CBA comes up after 2021, I kind of think, even though it's not really on their list now, I think it's going to end up being there because it's sort of like you're going to let the horse out of the barn and then try to get it to go back in. Give players two seasons of designated hitters in the National League. I think come CBA time, they're going to say, we want to keep this. We don't want this to go away. So I think now that it's here for good.
You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube,
that's
Jared.
That's the one.
Well, I'm very much
like horses, like letting the horses out of the barn and then, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, sure. There's something about getting that stupid horse back in there.
As my grandpappy always used to say.
There you go. Shout out to grandpappy. I'm very much, before we move on from DH, I'm very much here for Victor Caratini full-time DH. I don't know about you.
I support it. Very I don't like Schwarber's the guy that I think everybody's their mind goes to first, right? Because you know, a lot of people can't accept that he is actually a decent outfielder, but I won't get into all that this time around. But yeah, Caratini, give that guy more at bats. He's a great hitter.
Love it. Sign a new catcher. Caratini goes to DH. Schwarber gives him a day off at DH every now and then, so he doesn't have to play defense. Let's make that happen. And also, don't get COVID. The next one that we need to talk about is the extra innings rule. So this one states that each inning after the ninth will start with a runner on second base, and that runner will be the batter in the lineup immediately preceding that inning's leadoff hitter. What a terrible way to write that. Why did they say it like that?
I don't know. That's so dumb.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So you're basically starting with a runner on second. I don't know about this one, man. This is weird.
It's like, what are we doing? Is this like beer league softball? What is that? It's so weird. Like, and maybe, I don't know. I do have to say, from seeing some of the comments that like minor league broadcasters and people like that have said, because this has been happening in the minor leagues for a couple years now, they all seem to like it. So who knows? Maybe I'll end up changing my stance on it after seeing it for a season or so. But I think it's just absurd. Like, here's the thing about like this obsession with like speeding up the game and also shortening the games. First of all, it's not some extraordinary number of games that go to extra innings. It's, you know, look at any team's schedule. It doesn't happen that often. And it's not like teams regularly have games that go 13, 14 innings. That's also not super common either. So here we are like obsessively trying to fix this thing that isn't actually wrong and creating this new rule that is just bizarre to fix this thing that isn't actually wrong. So I don't know if you can tell, but I hate it.
Yeah, I'm picking that up a little bit. I'm getting the vibes of hatred for this rule.
The only way I would accept it, there's one small revision that I would make to this rule, and it would be this. When there are fans in the stands, so maybe not this year, but next year, you can use a runner on second base in extra innings, but only if it is the drunkest guy in the stands. You pull him out, you get a uniform on him, and you send him to second base.
I mean, I think that's brilliant. I love it.
Or, the guy who, like, is yelling at Chris Bryant that he sucks, like, put a uniform on him and send him out there.
It's either that or the guy that starts the left field sucks, right field sucks chant. Those two guys have to battle it out first, and then the winner gets to run from second. But you have to be hammered.
Yeah, you right. We need to watch both of you like shotgun a 16-ounce beer, and then like arm wrestle each other at the pitcher's mound, and then whoever loses has to run. So
we're just making baseball better right now.
It's so much better. Or it's like when I was in college, there was an intramural softball team that their whole gimmick was they would hit the ball and just keep running no matter what until they either were tagged out or they scored. And so
people can't throw.
Right. Well, and it worked in intramural softball because people can't throw, can't catch. Or when something weird happens, they like panic. And so maybe it becomes that, like you just hit the ball and you just have to keep running until you either score or make it out.
I love that. So, yeah. I mean, when I first saw that rule, I just thought of in the same vein as intramural softball. Like when we play softball, you have an hour to play. And if you're the last game of the night, they say, hey, you know, we'll play until the lights go off. But when the lights go off, we're done. And so like I picture MLB just being like, we got to get these games in before they turn off the lights at Wrigley.
Yeah.
We got to make this happen. How do we speed up this game?
You can play as long as you want. I promise. And
you just have to pay the light bill, man. Like
you pay the light. And you know what? The fans can choose to leave or turn off the TV and go to bed and wake up the next morning and find out what happened. Like no one is holding you in your seat or forcing you to watch the TV at 1 o'clock in the morning when the game's still going. Like you can shut it down. So,
right.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, you might be right. Like I've heard the same thing from the minor leagues that people have liked it. It's probably a little bit more exciting. Cause think of the feeling, I'm giving you a counterpoint here, Jared. Think of the feeling that happens during an extra inning game when like, maybe it's the 11th, you've gone, you know, one inning and a half where you haven't had any runners, somebody gets a base knock and they end up getting to second. Like everybody's butt cheeks clenched at that point. And now you're starting off an inning with that. Maybe that's more exciting. I don't know.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, maybe, you know, talk to me a few months from now and maybe I'm loving it. So.
All right. We'll check back in. Yes. We'll check back in. Next one is pitchers can use a wet rag to keep their fingers. My wife's favorite word is moist. So keep their fingers moist in lieu of licking their fingers, which I thought that was kind of funny, but also it makes a ton of sense.
Oh yeah.
You just got to make sure the rag sterilized somehow. I don't know. Like,
right.
Are they just going to keep the rag on the dirt mound? Like, where is this rag going to be?
Yeah. Maybe like a fanny pack.
Fanny pack. Yeah.
And just, quarterbacks wear those little, like you put your hands in there to warm them up on those cold games. So
I got one for golf.
There you go. Get the pitchers a little fanny pack. They can moisten up.
Okay.
My thing is I hope that there's like very serious and deep discussions about whether the rag was too moist. Like who is checking the moisture level? Does the umpire have to go out and like stick his finger in it and like, okay, we're good. Or I don't. Yeah. Who? And also does the team employ a rag moistener?
I mean, you almost have to, right? You got to keep like people need jobs right now. Rag moistener might be a good one.
Rag moistener.
Why say wet rag? Pitchers can use a wet rag. I just pictured going to my garage and getting a rag that's been sitting out there since 1996 that has like Hulk Hogan on it or something. Like a wet rag. Like you couldn't have said towel or something. A rag.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a wet towel sounds so much better.
All right, baseball.
Yeah. But we went with rag. So
I guess it tested well with the audience or something.
They brought in a test group and they're like wet towel or wet rag.
That's the way to go. Next one is the new three batter minimum rule is going to remain intact, which means that each relief pitcher must face at least three batters. I actually like this rule a lot.
Me too.
I think you know, you and I have talked about this, like come September when the rosters expand, baseball sucks.
Yeah.
And so this is going to eliminate that. Hopefully we'll see if it, I don't know, like managers are going to hate it. But I think it's good.
Yeah. I think this is one of those things where, you know, we talk about pace of play. I do think they've gotten it right here because there's nothing more miserable than like, it's the eighth inning and every batter that, you know, the manager's trotting out there to bring in a new pitcher. Like that's horrible. I hate that. So, I like this rule because even if he gives up three hits, he's got to face three batters and the manager's got to be strategic about like, who do I trust to face the next three batters? It kind of stinks for those like one out specialists, like those, the Loogies, the left-handed one out guy. But, so it goes, like the game changes over time. But yeah, this one I like. I'm glad that it's going to be there this year. And I think fans will appreciate this too. I think as they see the way that like the that last third of the game plays out differently, they're going to be happy about it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Next one I think is funny, but also sad at the same time. If you're a manager or a player and you start arguing with an ump and you come within 6 feet, ejected. Automatically. I mean, it's just, it's unreal. Like, how are we playing baseball? How is that a rule? And you're still playing baseball.
I know. And like, I know if you, cause how did then you explain, like, you know, think about a guy standing on first base and the first baseman is right there next to him. Like, how do you justify that? How do you justify the umpire standing right behind the catcher's back? To call the pitches. Like, how do you, you know, and I get it with an argument, they're like in each other's faces and there's spit flying everywhere. And I get it, but I want to see the umpire who's going to like, as I don't know, which manager, somebody's just coming at him. The umpire's like, whoa, 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 that's 5.5 feet. And does he, you know, like, and who's,
here, I got a fix for this rule. I got a fix for it. So each umpire has to wear an inner tube that measures 6 feet wide. You hit the inner tube, you're out. That's it.
Yeah. Touch the inner tube. You're done.
That's pretty good. I think it's like bumper cars.
Yeah. Or they both put on those like sumo suits and yeah, you can argue all you want. Just don't let your suits touch.
Perfect. Fixed it. Done.
Yeah.
The next one is kind of in the same vein. No fist bumps, high fives or handshakes. Only tagging is allowed. So Javi is safe in that regard. But that, I mean, that's weird. Like, think about the end of the game at Wrigley, Go Cubs Go is playing, the bullpen comes in, the outfield comes in, and they're on the mound, they're shaking hands, they're high-fiving everybody. Like, what, you just wave at each other when you go by now? What's that look like?
And it, like, if it's okay for them all to sit together in the dugout and be together in the clubhouse and shower together, but we're worried about them high-fiving each other? Like,
yeah, this is what I'm talking about. It just doesn't seem thought out.
No. And I get that it's like you try to put in whatever measures you can to make this safe, but like if you're worried about guys on the same team high-fiving each other, maybe you shouldn't be playing. But I don't know. It's going to be weird to see where they just don't. Like a guy hits a home run and comes back into the dugout and everybody just like salutes him.
Everybody's going to get the rookie treatment now.
Yeah.
Just no emotion. Touching. Yeah. we'll see how that looks. It's just going to be weird. The whole thing is just, it's going to be unique. Last thing I think I want to talk about moving on from rules is almost laughable because of everything we just talked about, but the rumors that fans are going to be able to be in attendance, because that's just a whole nother level of crazy,
right?
In my opinion. What are your thoughts on that? And what are the odds you think that's even going to happen?
It's my thoughts on that go in like three different directions. So I'll try to do it one at a time. But like the first thought, honestly, that I had was, so we spent over a month with owners and players going back and forth, and the owners insisting that they had to reduce players' play based on the players' pay, based on the fact that there would not be fans in the stands. You know, hey, we can't pay you. We got to prorate your salaries. We got to pay you on a sliding scale because we're losing all this money without fans at games. This went on for weeks and weeks. And then the moment that they finally have an agreement, suddenly we're getting these reports about like, hey, we might actually try to have fans in the stands. Now, obviously, it's not the same as like a packed Wrigley Field, but still, that's revenue that you weren't talking about a week ago. So that was like thought number one. Like, if I'm a player, I'm pissed. Because yes, I'd like to play in front of fans, but so much of this argument was framed around the fact that there would not be fans. So I made sacrifices as a player based on that belief. So that's, yeah, that's thought number one. Thought number two is just like the disparity then that that creates where some teams might be able to have fans and then some teams don't because of just where you are in the country. Like maybe in Chicago, it's okay to do it, but in Arizona, it's not because, or Texas, because their cases are spiking so much worse. So is that fair where teams in one city are making a little bit more money because they've got fans there and then other teams don't? Should there be revenue sharing on that just because not every club even has the ability to have fans at their ballpark? So that was thought number two. Thought number three is just, that's a whole additional layer of how do you deal with like letting fans get into the ballpark safely where they're not all packed together in line waiting to come in. How do you deal with like the concession stands, the bathrooms? You know, I mean, think about the bathrooms at Wrigley where everybody's like staying around the trough.
The beer vendors,
all that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like everybody thinks about spreading people out in their seats, which is certainly doable. If there's only 8,000 people at Wrigley, you know, everybody could like have a row to themselves practically. But what happens? Yeah. When I need to get up and go to the bathroom and there's 12 other people there, we're all packed in together. Like I don't, so that just seems like a needless level of additional risk. As much as I would rather watch games where there are fans there, I'm not sure that that's a good idea right now.
Yeah, I agree with you on all counts. I mean, I think like let's worry about the post game shower schedule for the players before we worry about bringing randos into the stadium, right? Like,
right.
And maybe they've already talked about it. I don't know, but it just seems like we're putting the cart before the horse. There it is. There's the expression.
That's the horse expression we wanted.
That's the horse one. But yeah, it just doesn't seem realistic and kind of in bad faith, in my opinion. But let's close out with what you think the odds are that we not only start the MLB season, but we actually finish it. If you had to give a percentage on if that happens.
I think they'll start it. I think they've invested too much energy into trying to make this happen to give up on it before it at least starts. But I'm skeptical that they're going to be able to get the full season in, just because unless you like ignore what's happening or pretend like a certain number of cases isn't a problem, it's just so hard to envision where you're not going to have like, oh, this player on this team tested positive and now X number of players for that team have to be quarantined for the next 2 weeks and can't play. And so I'm a little skeptical. I'm not like below 50% skeptical, but I think there's at least a 30 or 40% chance that we get some distance into the season and then have to say, ugh, we got to shut this down. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. And I don't know, like I'm not smart enough to fully understand like to talk about it, like a second wave and what that looks like and when that might happen. But I also know that as you start to open things up, there does increase the possibility that like more people will get infected because, you know, you're now exposed to more people than you were before. And let's be honest, like people get careless because, hey, we're, you know, here in Illinois, we're in phase four, which, you know, is sounds really good, but like, yeah, people get careless. And so I worry about that too. So I want so badly for these 60 games to all get played and for there to be a postseason. But yeah, I feel like there's a pretty decent chance it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'm more skeptical than you are that the season gets banged at some point. I don't know. There's just a lot of factors, and like we don't even know enough about like the actual thing that's causing this. And I just don't like, something just doesn't compute with my brain. So that's one side. The other side is like, I'm sure you felt the same way. It's been so weird without sports. I did not realize how much my life revolved around it. It's like I have free time now. It's weird. But I miss it so much, and I hope that they can do it and they can do it safe. I know we've joked a lot, but hopefully that people do take this seriously, and it is, you know, something that we can just find some enjoyment from at some point. But at the same time, I don't want people to be taking a risk. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of unknowns, but hopefully people are thinking about these things, because it's just crazy. But Jared, my man, it's been great talking with you.
Yes. And we need to, let's get back on it here once things get rolling with spring. Because I should, the nice thing, again, selfishly, because both the Cubs and White Sox, and they'll all be training at like their home ballparks, I should be able to go see some quote-unquote spring training events. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting just to see what that's like.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing what that sounds like. But appreciate you coming on. It was great chatting with you. Make sure to follow Jared at Jay Willis. It's at JWYLLYS. He does a lot of great work, and he's a great follow on Twitter, so make sure you do that. We will be back, I don't know, sometime, if we have something to talk about. Maybe sports will be back. Maybe it'll get banged, and we'll talk about it either. But until next time, make sure to follow me at MPhelps11. Cubs Den is at Cubs Den. You can also find us on the Chicago Now website. And wear a mask, guys.